Good morning.
Good morning.
Just in time.
Good. Love when that happens.
Today, we're going to begin with an exercise. So to prepare us for the exercise, as we open with an om, I thought we might go a little deeper and do three oms together. Are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take three deep and conscious breaths. And with a deep in breath. We'll be discussing section of the yoga of action today. Action. From the Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord. Today our sermon was about, what was our sermon about today?
Love.
About love. Keep love in mind. It turns out that everything we say today is also about love. So let's try and see how that's so for us. And I'll provide some of my own insights as we go along. Let's start with an exercise. And we'll relate this to love. So the exercise is to repeat something we've heard before. We'll do it together. Here we go. Susan's favorite.
My favorite.
And we're going to relate this to love, aren't we? You have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruits. Together,
you have a right to your actions, but never to your actions' fruits,
as it relates to love. Act for the action's sake, and do not be attached to inaction, as it relates to love. Shall we repeat together?
Act for the action's sake, and do not be attached to inaction,
as it relates to love. Let's continue with the affirmations. Self-possessed, resolute, act without any thought of results. Together.
Self-possessed, resolute, act without any thoughts of results.
As it relates to love. Open to success or failure, this equanimity is yoga. As it relates to love, together.
Open to success or failure, this
Equanimity is your God. We could also say this equanimity is divine love within us, Christ consciousness. That's the exercise. Comments or questions? We're going to relate all of the talk today to love. Love is one of those words that has so many different connotations and meanings. It seemed to me a good idea to intellectually grapple with the idea of love before we go on. The love we're talking about today is not the romantic love that we may have experienced. Is it? Romantic love, at least in my recollection, is attached to a particular feeling with a particular person, and it's involved with our instinctive desire to mate, procreate, our urges in that manner. To me, that's the aspect of romantic love. This is another sort of love we're talking about, isn't it? In Greek, they have different words for the two sorts of love, eros and agape. Eros is the romantic love, agape is the love we're talking about. We just have that one word, love. To get deeper into what love means for us, we heard love mentioned frequently today. Let's go a little bit deeper and see what that really means for us. I say there are three aspects to love. Love is what we are, being love. Love has to do with what we feel. And love expresses itself in action. Got it? So love is something that we are, could be, something we feel, and expresses itself in action. We sometimes get these mixed up. It's good to notice the difference. For example, love is what we are. For example, when you wake up in the morning, are you love? As you get out of bed in the morning, are you love? Or are you something else? What we are, I am love. We know some spiritual teachers have said this, I am love. Not only is God is love, but I am love, and that since I am God, I am Om Love, Dios, God, Yahweh, Jehovah, Allah, Adonim, something we could be. That's one of the legs of love you might associate with. The second love is feeling. Feeling. Perhaps we've experienced a feeling of love with regard to an object, another person. I love Janice. Love you, you, you. Love you. A feeling of love. I love myself. Another feeling that some people have or don't have or feel they should have. And struggle with. I love you, I love me. That's a feeling, isn't it? Love as who we are, and what we are, love as a feeling. I'm going to get on to what love in action is, but first, I want to explore a little more what love is as a feeling. We have the beauty of our language, and we're also humbled by it, because words mean different things. Feeling, for example. Love is a feeling. If we look at it carefully, there are two kinds of what we call feeling. Two kinds of what we call feeling. For example, I look at you and I feel love. Got it? I look at you, I feel love. Look at you, I feel love. Now I look over here and you don't look at you anymore because I'm not looking at you anymore. I'm looking at that tree. Oh, I love that tree. Huh? And if my car were here, I'd love my car. So there's love as part of our humanity. We as intrinsic to us, sometimes love things, sometimes don't. And there's another kind of love, and that's a love that I harbor in my heart. Difference. I harbor in my heart. So it has, it's sort of like being love, isn't it? So I wake up in the morning and I'm harboring love in my heart. It's just there. Sort of like being love. So with emotions, there are two ways we can have emotions. We can have them in the moment, and we can harbor them. This is sometimes used as a way to explain the usefulness and the danger of anger, of fear. It's one thing when the tiger jumps out from behind the tree, scares the tea out of me, and I'm afraid, and I run. It's one thing, who was it who related this story? You saw a man walking his dog and he started to beat his dog. And the man said, "Sir, don't beat that dog." And the man replied, "I'll beat that dog if I want to. He's my dog." And the man replied, "Sir, it's not your dog, it's God's dog. And I'm here to protect it." Anger that arose in the moment. Got it? There's a difference between the, when the man stopped hitting the dog, the anger went away. It served its purpose. It served its purpose, spurred us to action. There's another kind of anger, isn't there? And that's the anger we harbor. To plant somehow a seed of anger in our heart, perhaps from a man beating his dog incident. We don't let go. We plant it in our hearts. The next day we say, that son of a bitch beats his dog. All those sons of bitches that beats their dog really makes me angry. Makes me angry. And the following day, I just can't get over it. People beating their dog, it's wrong, I'm right. They shouldn't beat their dogs. Just can't get over this anger. See the two kinds of anger? The spontaneous, natural, God-given anger, and the kind of anger we harbor in our thoughts and water and grow it till it becomes who we are, rather than I have love, wake up in the morning and I have anger. Perhaps you've seen angry people, experienced angry people in your life. Whatever comes up, they just seem to be angry. Angry, it's who they are. It's not that they experience anger in the moment, no, somehow they've harbored it in their hearts. Psychiatrists will tell us, if you look deeper, you might find some unresolved angry incidents in this person's childhood or a formative period of life. somehow this instrumental experience wasn't properly resolved. And that's what got embedded in the heart, and it inadvertently shows up when men beat their dogs. So we could say that there's some way of resolving anger that's harped in our hearts. There also might be some way of resolving love we harbor in our hearts.
Yeah.
Or maybe we don't want to.
That word harbor, it's an interesting use of the word harbor, because I always think of that being attached to something negative, that you're talking about harboring love. Does that make it a negative?
Nurturing it, giving it water.
Putting it in a safe code. I guess it maybe that's where the harbor is.
Yeah, putting love in a safe space. So it's always available to us. Just like some people put anger in a safe space, so it's always available. To point out there's nothing wrong in feeling, to harbor certain feelings, do we choose the feelings we wish to harbor? Choose the feelings we wish to harbor. By choosing the feelings you wish to harbor, maybe I'm harboring the feeling of love. It doesn't mean that in the moment I don't get angry when the fellow's beating his dog, and sir, that's not your dog, it's God's dog, and I'm here to protect it while harboring love in the heart, so that you are love. I bring up these points so that as we communicate with each other, and especially as we communicate with ourselves, we gain some deeper understanding of who others are and who we are. There's a third leg to this discussion of love. That is action. Who we are, what we are, feelings, and actions. And we've been talking about actions here, haven't we? Self-possessed, resolute, act without any thought of results, open to success or failure. This equanimity is yoga. So with regard to love, what are the action attributes with regard to love? It's one thing to bandy love about. How does love show up in action? What we do. I'm not talking about romantic love here, I'm talking about agape, this love that we have now harbored. How does it show up in action?
Empathy.
Empathy. Empathy for others. And perhaps more deeply, empathy for ourselves.
Right. First and foremost.
Empathy for who we turned out to be. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Empathy, in case any aspects of who we turned out to be are not keeping us centered and balanced and in our inborn peace. Empathy. Another action attribute of love, I suggest, agape, is respect. And we act with respect towards others. It's easy enough with people you love, as a feeling, to act with respect. But sometimes we have people outside our circle, or maybe even within our circle, family members who misbehave, perhaps. They don't behave in the way we wish they would. For heaven's sakes, can we still act with respect towards those people? When Jesus said to love your enemy, he didn't mean necessarily to go hug him and kiss him, did he? No. He could, but... they might not want that. And you could treat that person in your family as just has a pattern of not behaving the way that you would. You could treat them with respect and show them your love in that manner, with respect. You could act that way. Self-possessed, resolute with respect, act without any thought of results. That your respect is going to elicit open to success or failure as you respect someone, keeping your equanimity. Respect, empathy, generosity. Generosity. And you treat that wayward family member with generosity. Not necessarily giving them money, although they may need some or want some or ask for some. And you treat them with generosity of spirit. And you look at that person, and instead of having your reactive mind snap into judgments, well, they're just always wrong. What's behaving wrong is saying things that are not true. And they seem to be disrespecting me. I feel disrespected by what they said about others. I feel disrespect. Can you still treat that person with generosity of spirit and see the own consciousness, which we call the Christ consciousness, in that person that has treated you with disrespect, treated others? Makes you angry when you see that person treat others with disrespect or worse. In your action, can you act from a spirit of generosity? This doesn't mean you withhold appropriate actions to people who are misbehaving when you have the ability to do something about that misbehavior, something particular you can do. Can you do it from a generosity of spirit and also with empathy for who they are or compassion? Those are some of the action attributes of love. Action attributes of love: respect, generosity, and compassion or empathy. So we've seen we have this wonderful word love. It can be something we are. It can be associated with feelings that come up in a moment or feelings we harbor. It can be associated with things we do, the acts we do. Now we're going to focus more on action and keep love in mind and keep three important actions. From love in mind, which is respect, generosity, and empathy or compassion. Self-possessed with love. Resolute, having resolved to stay in my love consciousness. Act without any thought of results, letting God choose the results. Open to success or failure, not being attached to either one. In that way, we achieve a state of equanimity, which is also called love, or yoga, or who we are. Here's another sloka. We're going to look at some other aspects of action. The unenlightened do things with attachment, wanting some results for themselves. The idea is here, we may or may not have some wish to get a little more enlightened. a little more light. That may be something we wish. The sloka says the unenlightened, okay, let's see how they behave. Do things with unenlightened. Do things with attachment, wanting some results for themselves. We've seen plenty of unenlightened people who do things with a certain outcome firmly in mind. They're going to get really pissed off if it doesn't work out that way, whether it's an election or a relationship. Right? They have particular attached, particular outcomes. An enlightened person does things with the same zeal, Arjuna, but without attachment. Remember who Arjuna is? Arjuna is the warrior king or the supplicant, and the voice here is the voice of the Lord, incarnated as Krishna. An enlightened person does things with the same zeal, Arjuna, but without attachment, and thus guides others on the path of selfless action, which is what Karma Yoga is. Karma Yoga is selfless action.
Is Arjuna us in this example?
Sure.
Yeah. Sort of Jesus Christ-like, the conscious spirit.
We are the supplicants, and the Lord is the teacher. So in this case, it's third party. So there's Arjuna, the supplicant,
right,
and there's the Lord teaching him. And we're the supplicant, looking for the Lord actually within to enlighten us, looking to see if any of these teachings land for us, Arjuna. So Karma Yoga is the path of selfless action. All right, well, here's another aspect of action somewhat different from what we've talked about. We've talked about acting naturally, self-possessed, resolute. You have the right to your actions, but not your actions' fruits. Now we get an additional and deeper nuance into actions, the path of selfless actions. Our actions need not only be cast without thought of results, just right in and of themselves, but also selfless. So that's what we're going to look at a little bit today, selfless action.
No, Steve, that's not very easy to do. I understand the concept. It just doesn't seem very easy. It's not, you know, especially in our American upbringings and culture and competitiveness and sports. And
so give me an example where it's tough to perform selfless action.
Well, I'm working on this, but for example, let's say at work, right? Mm-hmm. I'm selling a Toyota. So I've listened to their needs. I've asked all the opening questions. They're on the right car. We went on a thorough Toyota Safety Sense test drive. They know they need a car. We presented numbers. They went through this auto buying program, so it's the best numbers we can provide for that particular car. And the author, in this case the buyer, says, well, actually it was a friend. She was already in, but her friend said, can we have it for less? And I'm, you know, that feeling of frustration, knowing that I can't go any less. So I try to submit, and I try to stay away from the fruit, the action's fruit.
So tell me, what action do you take that you feel is not selfless? Just an example, if you're willing to share.
So I say with a little bit of bitterness, I said that's the best we can do.
Yes.
And I guess the first thing is to recognize I'm in that state.
So can you explain why, when you tell them that's the best we can do, why that is not a selfless action? Can you explain that?
I guess in some sense it is. In some sense, you know, I want to acknowledge their request, right? Because it's just simply a request, but I'm taking it personally, I think. perhaps that's part of it.
So if you're taking it personally, that means, I hear you saying, that there's some fear or something associated with this. Perhaps fear that you won't get all the commission you deserve.
Or the fee, right.
Something will
sure.
be taken away from you. Is that right?
It's probably more than that. I think underneath that is that it's not so much the deal, getting the deal done, or the money that comes associated with getting a sale. I think it's probably just some underlining disharmony. In other words, I'm yearning for harmony. Everything's going well. And I think that's ultimately what I'm missing, is the need for, in this example of love, right? So my need for love is kind of like this peaceful harmony.
So what I hear you saying is, you take the action of saying that's the best we can do, but something in you is uneasy with that feeling. It's not being, it's not a selfless service that you're doing there, because these emotions of lack of harmony come up for you. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for the reflection. That helped a lot.
Yes,
there's more empathy.
Well, to get off of this, come off of that one, it's like, am I doing a tax return?
Mm-hmm.
When people tell me it's too expensive. And, well, I can do it for free. I can do it without having them pay me a penny. Now, I have to pay my people, I have to pay my rent, I have to pay all this kind of stuff, but I can do it for free.
Yes.
And that would be completely selfless.
Would it?
And I do that a lot.
Would it? I hear the emphasis is on you. I could do it.
Yeah.
I don't have to. To me, that's not selfless. That's a focus on yourself.
Well, I often see somebody coming in, and they probably don't have as much money as I do, so I should do it for them free, because they'd be happier if I did it free. So the selfless thing runs in. I don't know.
Would they?
The people who get it free are usually pretty happy about it.
Are they?
Their expectations are surprised.
Are they?
Are they taking advantage?
Are they? Are they truly, deeply satisfied? Are they experiencing a momentary, I acted and I got what I wanted?
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I acted and I got what I wanted. That's not true satisfaction or happiness. Act for the action's sake, not for the results. When we're focused on ourselves, you know, I could do this, but I don't have to, should I, and so on, I suggest that's not selfless action. I suggest that's perhaps self-oriented action. It's about 6 minutes before 11.
The selfless action is
Dan needs
to
run off.
Yeah.
Go to the choir practice. Thank you for joining us.
This is a very interesting conversation. It's meaningful because it's practical and I can understand it. So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, Satchitananda is practical. If it's not practical, it's just a good idea.
Right.
Yes.
I noticed in both examples, the other person was trying to take more than one of the people wanted
to
give.
Right. And back of my mind, I'm judging myself for the situation. I'm saying that's not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I need to learn to let go of that thought first, right? It's the internal thought that I'm holding that's creating this disharmony. In some, from my point of view, from what I can control.
But
selfish. I'm bringing this energy of
selfish and selflessness have to do also with what makes you feel comfortable.
Right, I gotta be authentic. I gotta
authentic,
be truthful.
Thank you. That's
I gotta speak my
word.
Truth. Yeah.
So maybe in some situations, when you feel comfortable, you can go lower, and in some situations, when
yeah,
you can't,
depends
you
on
know.
Where we start, right? I mean, a number is only so far. We can only go to zero. I mean, we can't go. Well, we could, but then that's paying out of my pocket. And sometimes I actually, you know, we do that as a dealership as a whole, but we're already there. And so this particular situation, she kept, you know, based on my 21 years experience there, you know, and then I'm judging her because now she's, I'm telling a story to myself. And I think that's where it becomes, is this self-awareness is the first step, right? The I. And then I need to be responsible of that negative, darker thoughts or the feelings that I'm dissatisfied, the disharmony. And then three, I need to learn to let go.
Let me share a story with you that relates to this, Sam. Let me share a little story that relates to this.
Sure.
Yesterday, I took my shoes to the cobbler to have them repaired. All they're going to do is glue on the soles. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, I fixed an expectation.
That's what you're talking about.
I went to one cobbler, and he was closed out of business. I went to the other one. That's been in business for a long time. I knew he would be there. And he's in a really good spot. Probably pays a good rent there. And when I gave him the shoes, he said, that'll be, I have $20 in mind. His 10 would be better. But no. That'll be $25, sir.
Happens all the time.
$25, sir. So I put a big smile on my face, and I said, well, I'd like a senior discount, please. I often do this. I say, like a senior discount, please. Now, take a look at me. Do I need a senior discount of $5? No. Do I need an extra $5? I mean, the stock market went up and down $20,000 or something in my account the other day, or whatever, $5 or something. So do I need $5? No. Anyway, I smiled and said, may I have a senior discount? And the one fellow looked at me and didn't say anything. The other fellow said, well, this is labor. If it was goods, we might give you a discount, but we don't discount our labor. I said, okay. He says, by the way, we'd like to be paid in advance. I gave him the credit card. Now, where was my heart? Was I coming from a consciousness of anger? I got up in the morning angry and took my anger with me to the cobblers, and here the cobblers are trying to screw me. Another example of the world screw? No. I woke up in the morning, as I usually do, with a feeling of peacefulness. And when I got to the cobbler's, I had a feeling of playfulness. So when they turned me down for the senior discount, I just smiled. Well, this is fun, isn't it? Every now and then I get it, but I don't need it. And yet, I notice from a selfless point of view, the feeling of appreciation and gratitude the other person has by offering me this the senior discount. That's the difference. It's not that I need it or can make any use of it, but I notice the feeling of giving and gratitude the other person experiences when they offer me that senior discount. So when someone asks you for a discount, are they just being like me on automatic, asking for a senior discount? And can you look at them deeply and realize that if they got the discount, it would not serve them? It would not serve them, not really. By paying the price asked, that would best serve them, even if perhaps they don't have as much money as you or having some straitened circumstances. Even so, sometimes to pay the amount asked shows a deeper respect for who they are. That's love, respect. That they can do this, and that they will feel good about having paid, what they can do, and what is theirs to do.
Thank you.
On the other hand, you may see that they are truly in straitened circumstances and experiencing some distress, and by your giving of some discount or some money, it truly helps them. So where is the benefit? Is the benefit in you feeling that I've done a good thing? Or is the benefit in selfless action in seeing the deep gratitude, not the emotional, oh, you know, I'm not letting you screw me, but rather somewhere deep, appreciation for what you have done, and experiencing that as love.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's a difference between giving and competing, I think. A lot of it,
yeah.
What you were talking about earlier, is a competition.
Right.
Is it about me?
Yeah.
That's selfish action.
Yeah.
I don't have the money. It's going to take away my commission. They're trying to screw me. Is it about me? Or is it about them? Selfless action. What's really going on with them? What would truly serve them the best? Sometimes when people ask for money, it doesn't serve them, not really, to give them the money. Sometimes. And sometimes it does. That's our discernment. Can we look deeply into the request for action from us and treat that other person with deep respect for who they are?
I think you said it when you said you woke up playful. I mean, you went playfully. It's sort of like you went trying to look out for yourself, not in a harsh way, but to see what you could get, you know? I mean, some countries are so good at it, and we don't know how to barter. I've been told, you know, when you go in there, wherever you are in Mexico, don't just pay what they ask. You know, have a little fun with it. Have a good, you know, barter. And it's hard for us to do that.
It is.
I think you see a price, and that's it. And then the other person takes it personally if you say, well, how about this, you know?
Well, it depends. In a used car lot, it's
okay. Right.
It depends. When I first went to Lebanon years ago, I experienced the same feeling you had there, where everyone bargained.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't want to be treated with disrespect. Dumb Americans, you know, they pay what you ask. So I had to learn to bargain. So I was there for quite a while. I learned to bargain. And I became rather
accomplished. Well, they like it.
It's really a point.
I still enjoy it. That's why I ask for the senior discount. But I don't take it seriously. And one day in Lebanon, somebody wanted, I was buying something, I was with a friend, and I don't know, he wanted 10 cents for it. And I said, well, will you take a nickel? And afterwards, he said, no. Afterwards, my friend said, we don't bargain about the small stuff.
Yeah.
We just bargain about the big thing. What are you doing? You see,
there are rules, right?
I've gotten the wrong consciousness in my heart. It was about me being respected rather than me in selfless action, looking at the other, treating them with respect and with generosity. When you go in the rug merchant in Lebanon, you're not treating them with respect or generosity if you don't bargain. It's part of what they love in life. They say, here's the rug, and here's what it costs. And you say, oh, I don't think so. And you have to know the right price to offer. And then they say, well, let's have tea. Then they order tea.
Yeah.
Well,
the minute you say that, they know they've got you anyhow. You know?
So
we got
one. They bring in the tea and the coffee. And no, you may not buy it. Actually, but
yeah.
Part of the joy of life is sharing tea or coffee with your customers and being in that kind of loving presence.
Sure.
And actually, whether you buy the rug or not is immaterial. It's
then take you down to the jewelry department.
We'll talk some more about this next week. Anything else to share before we close our comments?
There is one book written by Dr. Gary Chapman. It's called The Five Languages of Love. I'm sure a lot of us heard it. And it's, you know, when you talk about the I, the feeling, and the need, or in this case, love, that helps me in context to figure out maybe perhaps when I'm having that disharmony feeling, how do I bring back the joy, right, in the Christ consciousness by thinking through those filters of what am I triggered by, you know, my need for the kind words, the acknowledgement that I'm here, is it a need for the love of a gift, or the act of service that I'm yearning for, or the sacred touch, you know, and that's how Gary Chapman kind of defines what the universal human needs for love.
Yes, I would define it in two different ways. We know that as babies need love.
Yeah.
They need that love. But they don't grow up by being held and touched and loved. They often grow up dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And yet, as we move and mature in life and go through our adolescence into maturity, we have the opportunity to satisfy the need for love by loving ourselves deeply. As we mature, we have an opportunity to learn to love ourselves deeply. So deeply that no matter what circumstances we show up in where we're not receiving that instant love, and we wouldn't mind having it, but are we dependent on it? Or can we be open to success, so I'm getting the love I need, or failure? Oh, that's interesting, I'm not getting the love I need. Because we are grounded in some sort of self-love, which means respect. I have fundamental, absolute, unshakable respect for myself. I treat myself with generosity. And whatever comes up for me, I treat my feelings, my actions with generosity. I have deep, unyielding, never-stopping compassion and empathy for myself. When you have and experience that kind of love, then you literally are the light of love. You are the light of love. And if someone comes in your presence and responds to that light and gives you some, great. Who's it great for? Not you. No. It's great for them. See that?
Mm-hmm.
You are the light of love. You come into someone's presence and they give you love. Who is it great for? Not for you. You're filled with love. You have the love of the universe. Rather, it's wonderful for them. It's wonderful for the Om Spirit that they are. And you are happy for them that they gave out their gift of love, not because you needed it, but because in giving it, it's a wonderful thing for them.
Mm.
So we don't need love after a certain point in life. Why? Because we are love if we've chosen to go down that path. And we are overflowing with the light of love. We don't need love. We need to give more out. That's our job in life, to hand more out, to be more respectful to others, to find someone we've not treated generously and treat them more generously, and to look at the person we didn't find compassion for in our hearts. We have compassion to that person as well. And if we see love come back, we are in our equanimity, knowing that when the love comes back, it's a blessing for them. It's a side blessing for us. We're so full of love, there's hardly any room for any more.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Thank you.
Very good.
Any other comments or questions before
Thank
we close?
Thank you, Steve.
I didn't get through many.
It's all good.
But we can do some more of the scriptures next week. Are we ready to close? It's been a deep session today, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Let's close with three ohms, shall we? Focus on our breath. Take nice three long in-breaths and out-breaths. And a deep in-breath. Peace.
Thank you.